Minister, what we're going to do will allow you and the delegation to compel so that we know who is here. From the side, this administration is at the back, but they need to introduce themselves so we know who is here. I'm not sure if this okay, and then comrades will introduce themselves, so at least you know who is here, and then we can manage.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee, other colleagues that are here, and members, I'm Pravin Gordhan, the finance. On my left is the director.
I'm sure they can introduce themselves.
Yes, I'm just going to pass them on.
Oh, all right.
I thought it was just the guy who takes my salary.
Oh,
I'm going to take care of himself. And that is the general of Rungita Fuzile, and then the rest will introduce themselves.
Good morning, members. My name is John Domo Khajan. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for public finance for the National Treasury.
Good morning, honorable members. So I'm the Acting Chief Procurement Officer working in the National Treasury. My name is Scott.
Good morning, Sean Rayfield from the National Payment System Department of the South African Reserve Bank.
Good morning, my name is Jeannie Baubach and I'm also from the National Payment System Department of the South African Reserve Bank.
Good morning, my name is Sajan, the Head of Communication and National Treasury.
Good morning, my name is Rebecca T. Michelle Treasury.
Good morning, Mark Ketcher, Public Finance National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Tim McGill, the Court of the London Light.
Sandy August, Parliamentary Office National Treasury.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Zagiru Wachauke, from SACA.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, good morning. My name is Chobozani Magwaza, CEO of SACA.
Good morning, my name is Bridget Mathan, member of the Social Development Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tim Zalasek, proud member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Lindy Wilson, member of the Portfolio Social Development Center.
Good morning, David Ross, member of the committee.
All right, thanks very much. I'm Comrade Tim Mukwege. I chair the committee. Comrade, welcome. We have to have you with us today. You are here precisely because of payment. if there was no sailor, you wouldn't care. Sailor to provide an objection on issues that have nothing to do with the department of state, but that is sure, as you are aware, that we are meeting with the department, SASA, led by the police head of that department, to engage on this matter that is the implementation of the nation, which the payment of social grants and the contract to do so. We had responses that still left question marks, especially knowing that the contract is to do with money, budget, and procurement process. And so we felt that it was important that on a matter as important as this one, we should get a complete picture. On two things. One, on how we came to where we are subsequent to the Constitutional Court. Secondly, where the Treasury is in relation to the current engagement, because we know at the end of whatever engagement, National Treasury has been will be a regular expenditure, which will then bring the entity back to court. But also appreciate that the budgetary implication, whatever the position, whatever. And so somehow National Treasury is linked in some way with that, or somewhere in the entity. But that element that we have sought to get clarity on, which we couldn't at first, it might be useful for current and information to get a complete picture of what the transpired. I'd just like to say that we in this committee have reinforced our positions that the fight of the government was actually find its right place away from the constitutional process, which is currently. And this is a committee that looks after the public health. So anything that condenses financial management that shows an element of recklessness most certainly attracts our attention. And it was our engagement around which I'm sure that this matter came to the fore, and why that we gave them a chance to come to the first meeting of the year, and comprehensive so it is in that context that we have had to pursue. It is not small contract, not small change, big money, and intended for one of the most critical projects we have, providing a safety net for those who are would otherwise not see the fruit of the pressure. And to therefore jeopardize that part of that element. So we want to have this thing there, and I'm sure that beyond today, as a committee, we will have an interest in terms of what because as we listen, as we read, a whole range of things coming out that are current. But what exactly is happening in the network is that I'm sure
point the committee decides what next step was today. I think our main interest is to hear from you in relation to the issues that are on the board. Once again, I want to thank you that, like most other ministers, when it goes to you, you responded in time. We're not left to get it, so the last minute. I understand that you're on your way somewhere out of the country tonight, but still nonetheless, thank you very much for that. Without further ado, comrades, I think let's give the minister to talk to us. And if there's anything that is not clearly articulated, we'll have the opportunity to
thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee, and let me at the outset congratulate you, your leadership, and members of the committee for the excellent work you do. As you point out, you are crucial to hold all of us to account to Parliament. And in financial matters, I think you've set a very important threshold that others in the country and in other sections of government, and indeed the private sector, need to emulate so that we can indeed have, as you said, good governance in our country. We come here today, and since we've had Oscar a few weeks a fortnight ago, not as the main actor, but as a supporting actor. So don't expect too much from us, but at the same time, I can assure you that my colleagues in the department have worked extremely hard to try to put together as much of a clear picture as we can, as many facts as we can, to help you to decipher what is going on. It's good to have the CEO of SASA back in action, but if there are other issues that we are not aware of, his presence is certainly helpful. And I've clarified that as well. So this presentation takes you through the following. The first point is that on the one hand we have responsibilities in terms of the constitution and the law, but on the other hand we also have responsibilities to the 17 million beneficiaries who on the 1st of April and days that follow need to receive their grants in various forms. And how we balance the two in each of the things that we do is going to be a crucial factor, as will be tomorrow's hearings at the Constitutional Court. So we're also trying to be careful not to preempt the court in any way, and the court will finally determine the shape and direction of many of the issues that we'll be looking at. You spelled out the purpose of our being here. We will briefly cover where does executive responsibility lie for the payment of grants and the respective roles of the Social Development Department, SASA, and the International Treasury itself. We will also give you numbers about the operational budget of SASA, the social grant budget that they actually manage as well, which on the average is between 2 and 2.5 billion rand a year. So you're right, it's a lot of money. The procurement processes that need to follow in any of these instances. The chronology of events, number 5, between, as you said, the Constitutional Court hearing in 2012, the decision in 2013, the subsequent decision in 2014, and up to the present time, to the extent that we've been involved in this. Number 6 is how does money flow from the national revenue account, the South African Reserve Bank, finally to the grant recipient, because that's been quite a mystery for us to solve. As I was indicating to you earlier, even late yesterday afternoon, we're trying to figure out exactly how much of time is spent where, in how many different accounts before the money gets to the grant recipient and beneficiary. the application from SAFA in respect of deviation from procurement rules, and some insight into the correspondence between ourselves and social development. And number nine refers you to the court judgments of 2013, 2014, and March 2016. There are various SAFA submissions to the court as well. Again, the SAFA people might be more useful than ourselves in this regard. And then finally, where do we stand currently? Last week, government formed a ministerial task team that has met three times already since last Thursday. And what are some of the matters that they are looking at? And we then round up and avail ourselves to any questions that you might have. We start on the note that, as I said earlier on, we have both a constitutional responsibility to obey the law, but at the same time, given the current circumstances, both in respect of SASA and ourselves, there's what one senior counsel calls a higher duty. And that higher duty is how do we ensure that people receive their grants on the 1st of April. And I want to say very categorically that everything that we are doing at the moment is directed at ensuring within legal bounds, and where flexibility is required, the court must determine that flexibility. How grants are to be paid on the 1st of April, and I'm fairly confident that grants will be paid on the 1st of April. The question is, what route do we travel between now and then to place ourselves in that position? As you pointed out, Chair, your invitations said that there are four issues we need to address. Our role in development subsequent to the Constitutional Court ruling, treasury understanding and observation of processes in SASA itself, our own position and role in the current contract being negotiated, and we'll clarify that for you as to what is being negotiated and what isn't, and any other relevant information in respect of grant disbursement and the contracts that apply. The executive responsibility issue is quite important because we don't want to confuse roles. That leads to supporting prime responsibility remains with my colleague, Minister Dlamini, the Minister of Social Development, and the entity that reports to her, SASA. And this slide essentially covers that. I think all of you have copies now, so I'm not going to read the details of the state of you. And in a letter that we received dated February 8th, which we quote here, paragraph of this point is actually emphasized, that the Department of Social Development, the executive department primarily in charge and responsible for social security, and more particularly the payment of grants. We agree with that. In our response, amongst the things that we've said is that in terms of Section 2161, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, and by the way, we should be exercised a lot more in government. The Minister of Finance and National Treasury are mandated to ensure transparency, accountability, and sound financial controls in the management of the country's public finances, which, as we know, is not always the case. So we describe our role as being fourfold. These are the four areas. First, as part of the budgeting process in government, determined by cabinet, what is the budget that is assigned to the department and its entities? In the first instance, what is the administrative budget? In the second instance, what's the budget for the actual social grants that are paid? And then, what has been allocated over the years in terms of what is called the insourcing project? That is when SASA said to the Constitutional Court, don't worry, we in the future are going to be able to develop a set of systems that will ensure that grants are actually paid. In other words, SASA itself will pay. Secondly, we are responsible for the procurement framework, as we outlined here, which essentially relies on the foundation in the Constitution in Section 217, and the various pieces of legislation, including the PFMA, the triple PFA, and various instruction notes pursuant on that, and in particular the instruction note number 3, which we'll refer to later, and sections 8.1 to 8.5. And these are the sections that allow a CEO of an entity to apply his or her mind in deviating from a competitive process as section 217 of the Constitution requires. The third is the oversight and support role. And here, again, in terms of section 216 of the Constitution, financial management, setting of norms and standards, and where appropriate, and requested advisory support and support in respect of any policy decision that a department or entity might want to take. And the fourth is, more generally speaking, what you might call national interest. In this instance, the national interest would be that we all want to make sure that grants are paid on the 1st of April. These numbers are the administrative budget of startup. Projected expenditure for 17-18 is 7.7 billion, of which 7.2 billion is a transfer from the Department of Social Development, and the balance surplus funds that they've been attaining. The budget availability normally exceeds, as we point out here, spending for each of the past 3 years. So there's a buffer, if you like, that they have. And 2.1 billion is around the estimated spending on payment to contractors in 16-17, and 2.3 billion around in 17-18. So honorable members have, chairperson, numbers available to them now from 13-14 right up to estimates for 2019-2020, which will give you some idea of what we are talking about in terms of money that are available. So there's no shortage of money in the system to do that which is required to do, to be done both administratively and in terms of payment of grants. Here is a more detailed table in respect on the left-hand side of each of the types of grants that are paid. And for that period again, 2013-14 to 2019-20, of course the latter years will be estimates. What are the amounts made available either in the original budget or in the adjustment appropriation? So the total budget for social grants for 2017-18 is 151.6 billion rand, growing to 175.6 billion rand in 1920. That is the outer year. The regulatory framework, as I pointed out earlier on, is built upon section 217 of the Constitution, the PFMA, the Treasury regulations, and the instruction note that I referred to earlier on. In terms of procurement, and I'm sure we'll come back to this issue, but we quote here section 217 of the Constitution and the relevant provisions within the PFMA, the Treasury regulations, and instructions. And essentially we're saying here that in terms of the Constitution, all tenders must be advertised so that there can be a competitive process. So the key is, emphasis is on competitiveness. In other words, anybody who wants an opportunity to bid to do a particular piece of government work must be allowed to do so, and allowed to indicate what their costs will be so that government can get best value. Except where, of course, you get collusion like we have in the construction industry, which Minister Patel and the PICC have been dealing with in recent times. In exceptional cases, as we point out here, deviations from competitive bidding process can be followed for emergencies that are natural disasters. In instances where you have sole suppliers and certain other exceptional cases. And in other instances, expansions and variations of existing contracts are allowed up to 15% or 15 million rand. These are a lot of technical details here, but they're important when you apply your mind to a particular application that might come from an industry. So our responsibility as a National Treasury, again in respect of procurement, in terms of the PFMA, is to monitor and assess the implementation of the Act, including any prescribed norms and standards in provincial departments and public entities and in constitutional institutions, to set out a procurement framework which is described in Chapter 16A of the Surgery Regulations and various instruction notes and circulars, the bureaucrats like instruction notes and circulars, so there's any number of them, and give approvals as may be necessary from time to time if proper processes are followed. Again, we make reference to the PSA and regulations therein. What we indicate here in particular at the top, number two, is organs of state and staff specification in such a way that would provide an equal opportunity and an equitable opportunity for historically disadvantaged groups to be able to put down. This is quite crucial because often it is the way in which specifications are designed that can enable maximum inclusivity and opportunity or narrow it down to your favorite person or entity as well. So often this is the gaming area in the procurement processes as well, if we have to be frank with you, and I'm sure some of you know this as well. The decisions from courts obviously are binding, and this sets out the obvious outcome of any court process that might be followed at a particular stage. This is the crucial one that might apply in this instance and has now begun to apply, which is Note 3 of 2015-17. And these are the five instances when a CEO or accounting officer may consider deviation from the normal competitive bidding process. Can read this, but the first one says the accounting officer or accounting authority must only deviate from inviting competitive bids in cases of emergency and sole supplier statements, which is what we pointed out earlier on. Second one, an emergency procurement may occur when there is a serious and unexpected situation that poses an immediate risk to health, life, property, etc. So these are, let's call it, often acts of God, as the insurance industry might describe them. 8.3, sole source procurement may occur when there is evidence that only one supplier possesses a unique or singularly available capacity, that speaks for itself. And 8.4, the same authority must invite as many suppliers as possible, excuse me, and select the preferred supplier using the competitive bid committee system, so that's what you would call a closed tender process, where you select a few and allow them to compete with one another. And 8.5, any other deviation will be allowed in exceptional cases, subject to the prior written approval from the relevant treasury. So this is where the relevant treasury in the national instance is the national treasury. In the case of a provincial event, it will be a provincial treasury. And the accounting authority has to determine what is the nature of these exceptional circumstances. Do they apply in this particular instance as the facts were set out to you last week? And if so, how to frame the application? So what I can report here is that the Treasury, and in particular the Procurement Office, has received an application in terms of Note 3 of 2016-17. And they are currently applying their minds in terms of the provisions set out here. The oversight role and the support role, or the national interest role that we indicated earlier on, what we want to share with you is that there have been various meetings with CASA, the Department, Reserve Bank, and National Treasury on the formulation or consideration of a new payment model based on the national payment system and operational issues that might obtain when grants have to be actually paid. There also, for example, have been bilateral meetings between Treasury and SASA. Sorry about the spelling there. For example, there was one such meeting on the 28th of July 2016 where there were reasonably exhaustive discussions about how prepared is SASA for 1st of April 2017. There are in December in particular, December 2016, all of us became a little bit more concerned about are we going to be ready on the 1st of April. And there were approaches to the Director General, which we have consent he can address later, from the DG of Social Development and with the involvement of the CEO of SASA. In that instance, we are under number three, SASA, Social Development, Treasury, and the Reserve Bank met as a joint task team. So you can see the date there, Chair, 11, 12, 13, 19, 20, 23rd. Those are all dates in January, and there were some dates in December as well. But right up to about the 24th or 25th of January, these meetings took place to consider a series of options that they have been formulating. Now, these are some of the options that task team that started in December 2016, flowed over into January 2017, came up with. There's six of them. So these are three, the first three. And again, those who have been involved in this process can elaborate on them for you should you require that. So the first option is obviously that the current service provider be asked to continue to provide these services. Now, what is of crucial importance here is to draw a distinction between the extension of the existing tender, let's call that option A, and a new tender, let's call that option B. So those are two different propositions. The first one, there are two legal opinions obtained by Social Development / SASA in 2016, one in I think about May 2016, the other in October 2016, both of which are reasonably clear that an extension will be unlawful. That's option one, option A. It will be unlawful because the court has declared this tender to be unlawful. And that if you do want to exercise that option, you have to go back to the Constitutional Court and, in a sense, get their consent that everything you said to them before doesn't apply any longer and you want option one here to, and option A of the two options that I indicated to actually apply. Second option, option B, is the alternate option where you initiate a new tender process. So just keep that in mind because we're going to repeatedly come back to that. Option two here is that banks that provide services to the majority of beneficiaries, in this instance, Grindrod Bank, be utilized in some way. Now, Grindrod Bank apparently has accounts for each of the recipients, and there's a distinction between recipient and beneficiary. The recipient could be a parent who receives a grant for himself or herself, plus three children, for example. So there are 10.5 million recipients of grants, but there are 17 million beneficiaries of grants. So that's a distinction that you might want to bear in mind as well. So you could utilize that bank. The option three is use all the banks who want to comply with SASA's requirements and use their network to actually distribute grants. Option four, there are approximately 60% of beneficiaries who are recipients who have access to some kind of banking services in one form or another. And again, banking options could be utilized in one form or another. Option five is to utilize the facilities that the South African Post Office currently has and proposes to develop. And option six is where the service provider for cash distribution to grant recipients who are currently using cash pay points is also utilized to complement other options above. In other words, option six is about combining the banking option with the cash payment option as well. So those were the six options that under the leadership of the two DGs they emerged with. The social grants tender process timeline and the litigation timeline, which we now take you through briefly, Again, I want to go into the details, this outlines and I'm sure this information was made available to you on the last occasion, how the tender under consideration right now by everyone concerned, which expires on the 31st of March 2017, how it evolved over from 15th of April 2011 to the 3rd of February 2012. In particular, 17th of January 2012, when it was awarded to GCPM. And of course, once it was awarded, you then moved from the tender process into the litigation process. And now that award of the tender is contested, and the court processes that begin to emerge, High Court, Supreme Court, and ultimately in November 2013, the Constitutional Court decides on this matter as well. So you can see on this slide the North Carolina High Court and the approximate dates when that court considers this matter, then the Supreme Court of Appeals, and the approximate dates when that court considers this matter. And then events in November 2014 and subsequently as well. So the 1st of November 2014 is when the company involved, CPS, lodges a notice of what they call ancillary relief to what the court had previously decided and determined on the 17th of April 2014. 19th of March 2015, the matter is set down with directions, and there's a lot of legal details there. And then currently, as you know, there's an application that the court, Constitutional Court will consider tomorrow from the Black Sash, and it will also consider whether freedom under law, whether Corruption Watch, and possibly even the Post Office can participate in the process in the court tomorrow. So the post office has a set of proposals they would like the court to actually consider as well. Earlier on I mentioned the money flow question. How does money flow each month from the National Revenue Fund to ultimately each recipient of a grant? The first thing to remember is, for example, in March, this current month, it's 3 working days before beneficiaries are due to be paid, which is the 1st of April, so it's 3 working days. So sometimes when there's a weekend or a holiday, it can become 5 days, or 4 days, or 6 days. A consideration that you would want to keep in mind as I go through. So 3 working days before the due date of payment. Money is transferred from by the National Treasury to social development to social development account held at the South African Reserve Bank. Social development then transfers that money to 9 provincial social development accounts also held at the Reserve Bank, and each of those accounts and the money in those accounts is then transferred to a net bank account of CPS Net 1. CPS Net 1 then pays over that money on the, and all of this happens on the same day. All happens on the same day. Right. So Net 1 CPS pays that money from their net bank account into the Vinrod bank account, and then from the first of each month, for a few days, the Vinrod Bank pays beneficiaries in various forms. So number 3 outlines what are those various forms that payment actually occurs. So the payment, they are those pay points that you've seen on television and elsewhere perhaps. They are merchant outlets, they are retailers who provide services and who house facilities that DASA has provided. And again, the CEO is good that he's here, he can tell you how that works. And approximately 4 million recipients get their grants at pay points and merchant outlets. Then there are payments made directly into bank accounts of recipients. That's 1.6 million people who receive their grants in that way. And another 4.9 million recipients, and this is an important one, who also have Grindrod bank accounts, they receive their grants by going to the ATM of any bank that has ATMs in a particular location. I'm not going to name them. And that withdrawal from the ATM attracts bank charges. And those bank charges are actually paid by the grant recipient. So that's important. So it's a cost to the recipient himself or herself. I hope that's not too fast, but you can study it on the paper that you have. So this is the flow that we've been able to decipher from various accounts. And again, our Tata colleagues can elaborate on that should that be required. But what's important in this whole process? Remember, the first four or so transfers all take place in one day. And then the money sits in the Grindrod account for anything up to 5 days on average. In 2017, we calculated yesterday, for the whole year, it's 5 years, 5 days on average. So for 5 days, presumably, that money is attracting interest. So we're talking about, what, 11.2 billion rand that is transferred through this chain that we described earlier on. So 11.2 billion rand, there's some interest rate, tax interest, and where does that interest go? We're still trying to figure it out. It should actually come back to government because it's money run by government. So these funds earn interest for CPS Grindrod. The question is, as I said earlier on, who does this interest actually belong to? Then the issue, as we welcome the Honourable Deputy Minister on your behalf, yeah. The last thing I want to do is take his job away. So as I indicated earlier, you remember we outlined Circular 3 earlier on in how a deviation process would actually work. So SASA has written originally to the National Treasury on the 7th of February 2017 to formally request support to extend the existing contract with CPS to pay social assistance benefits. The NT response, Treasury response on the 8th of February is quoted here. National Treasury does not support the extension of an invalid contract and will only support the extension if the Constitutional Court will further extend the order of invalidity beyond the 31st of March 2017. So this is the option A I referred to earlier, where consideration is given to extending the existing tender. And remember, we have two legal opinions to say very clearly, because that tender has been declared unlawful, any extension will also be unlawful. And if you want to do anything with that tender, go back to the Constitutional Court and obtain their permission. There was a second letter to the Treasury, the slight correction, the 10th of March should be 13th of March 2017. And this chair is now in relation to the option B that I described earlier, inverted commas, a new tender. And a formal application for deviation in terms of that 8.1 to 8.5 that I was describing earlier on, submitted to the National Treasury, and of course our officials in terms of the law are applying their mind to the application for deviation. There were various exchanges, as I indicated, between the two ministries and the procurement office in SASA. This gives you a summary of those exchanges. But the essence is that once we became aware of the one legal opinion in October 2016 in particular, which clearly stated what I indicated earlier about the unlawfulness of the original tender, and that the Constitutional Court should be advised of any thing that we need to do in that regard, But also, a more recent opinion also which extends the October 2016 or builds upon the October 2016 opinion, also says that the logic works like this. That tender is unlawful. Any extension of the tender in whatever form, because it is unlawful, has to be with the consent of the Constitutional Court, but also must be for the shortest possible time, so that you can get back to the principle in the Constitution of competitive tendering. So whatever abnormal activity or process you have to follow in order to make sure that grants are paid on the 1st of April, you've got to go back to the competitive process as soon as possible, or some process that is acceptable within the law. So, Chair, if you don't mind, I'm not going to take you through all of this, but it's here for the record. Letters from SASA, or between SASA and the procurement office, which also reflects some of the things that I've been saying earlier on. This is here as well. The various constitutional court rulings, I've been referring to them on and off, the 29th of November 2013, is the first ruling of the Constitutional, or judgment of the Constitutional Court, which essentially says that it wanted further submission on the date set out in the first dash on the 29th of November 2013, that it would be inappropriate to make a decision on a just and equitable remedy in the absence of further information and argument on these issues. That led to that being followed, and then a second judgment on the 17th of April 2014, and the order of the court, the decision of the court is outlined at the top of the slide, that the contract between SASA and CPS is declared invalid, as I indicated earlier. The declaration of invalidity is suspended, pending the decision whether to award a new tender after the tender process is rerun. So the court has the ability to say, although something is illegal, because of what we described earlier on as the higher duty to ensure that people continue to receive the grant, it can suspend the unlawfulness until a new process is put into place to ensure that there's continuation in payment of grants into the future. SASA to initiate a new tender process for the payment of social grants within 30 days of the order. The new tender must be for a period of 5 years. If the tender is not awarded, the declaration of invalidity of the contract will be further suspended until the completion of the 5-year period for which the contract was initially awarded. Within 14 days of the decision not to award the tender, sorry about the spelling error, SASA must lodge a report with the Register of the Court setting out all the relevant information on whether and when it would be ready to assume the duty to pay grants itself. Principles established by the Court, and this judgment is quite important, so you might want to study it in your spare time as this issue unfolds, because these principles have a great deal of import for other situations as well. So some of those principles are that the company involved in this instance becomes an organ of state and has a legal obligation to ensure that there is no disruption in the provision of grants. In other words, they just can't walk away. Now, so it says that if a state entity contracts with another, even private entity, to deliver a service, that private entity becomes, during the process of delivery of services, a state, an organ of state, and has all the obligations of an organ of state to continue to deliver the services and can't say I'm walking away from this. And that will be a matter of interest in the next day or so, as this might be argued before the Constitutional Court. CPS may not benefit under an unlawful contract. Of course, CPS is contesting this. So essentially it is saying because the contract was unlawful, I don't know what benefit means here, but it could mean that you don't profit from it because it's illegal in the first place. literal translation I can give it. Public procurement must be transparent and be accountable, that's self-explanatory. Now, on the 24th of March 2015, the court ordered delivered a composite order, as it is called, that CP has only the following five remaining objections to the draft amended RFP. This is now a tender which arose from the 17th of April judgment. That is in relation to beneficiaries, biometrics, and again, our SASA colleagues are in a better position to explain this. SASA shall effect its proposed amendments to the RFP to address the issues outlined in those paragraphs above, and to the extent that PPS still has any remaining objections to the draft RFP, as amended by SASA, PPS shall notify the parties in the court by 16th of April 2015. And the court will issue directions for an urgent hearing to resolve these issues. Again, 24th of March 2015, the court issued or said further that SASA shall circulate the RFP to all parties, the court and the respective bidders by 17 April 2015. All bids will be submitted by that day and shall award a new tender by October 2015. The parties may only approach the court for the court. Or that court, that's the Constitutional Court, for further relief. These are various SASA submissions in response to the judgments of the Constitutional Court, as we could find them. The appointment of this certification committee on the 26th of May 2014. Second report in terms of the appointment of the Bid Evaluation Committee and the Bid Adjudication Committee, October 2015. Third report, decision not to make an award. So this is the decision by SASA that the RFP, despite the responses to the RFP, no tender will be awarded, and that SASA itself will undertake the responsibility to develop this holiday system. Which is November 2015, the fourth report, SASA will perform the function themselves. The court then discharged its supervisory jurisdiction. In other words, the court said, now that you are taking responsibility to develop a system to pay out grants, we don't have to keep an eye on you, supervise. 2nd of March 2017, the fifth report, that's a very recent one, SASA will not be able to perform the function, as initially indicated in November 2015, and will be engaging CPS through a deviation process, I imagine. In terms of current discussions, as we saw in the media, I'm not sure what was said a week ago here, there were discussions between the SASA DSD delegation and CPS company, and that was prior to a deviation being obtained. So those discussions have been declared, if you like, void or null and void by the Ministry of Task Team appointed last week. And a new technical task team has been appointed by the Ministerial Task Team. And their responsibility is to take these negotiations further, to consider any obstacles that there might be to grants being paid out on the 1st of April, or to put it the other way, to ensure that grants are paid out by the 1st of April. And importantly, it's also to look at options for a future roadmap. How far has the SASA development of systems gone? What can the post office put forward as a proposition? What other options are there? And then in the next month or two, come up with some conclusions in this regard. So in sum, Chair, our role was firstly in relation to as part of the cabinet process and government process of budgeting, to provide, to ensure that Parliament actually appropriates money for administrative purposes and for the purposes of paying the grant. Secondly, to ensure that our guardianship of the procurement laws is properly conducted and that the laws and regulations are followed, as I pointed out to you. Thirdly, the oversight role, to ensure in terms of Section 216 of the Constitution that money is being spent in the right kind of way. And our fourth role is the national interest role, and you'll see that cutting across everything I've said. The way it was necessary for the Treasury to work with the Reserve Bank, social development, and stuff, either to develop those six options or anything else, we've been available to do so, and we are also part of the ministerial task team as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, the Minister, for the proposition.
Same corollary applies that at SASA,
they are the SASA CEO's business. They are the SASA CEO's business. They can never be mine. I can never have any use whatsoever that is I in the equity team. I can, in the process, just take over that responsibility and make it mine. It is his responsibility. So the decision, the final decision, are his or would be his. He must be comfortable with that. But when people come to us for help, we would offer it, we would have ideas, we can make suggestions. They are only suggestions. They are advice. And they are there. And they are not instructions. Usually, if things reach a point where we've got to communicate something to a colleague or colleagues have an instruction, we put them in writing. And the colleague have the right to insist that we put it in writing. So that is the way in which we were approaching the discussions on the matter at hand. We will try and find the quickest possible solution, given the time constraint, but which solution would still be perfectly aligned to the law at best, at worst, and at worst, as close as possible to what the law allows. So that was the...
Okay. And he's also saying, not saying it, is that politicians just keep their noses out of the job. In other words, I don't interfere with administrative decisions in relation to the job.
No, I hear you particularly. Of course, this was talking. I was not thinking about you and the team. Thinking about what's happening in Plasma, my observation so far, that and I think I'm doing better with you. I think that the military is taking over a strange function. Because I'm thinking how many CEOs have we had during this dedicated period. But I don't know if you get there with you, because that's not how that you want. But I want to check with Comrade. Alright, let me take the first two comrades are here, Comrade Minister. I'm sincerely hoping that they will ask some questions. And then we can decide whether we can not at the time or take three or four.
Let's thank the minister for coming to us for calling and then giving us quite a lot of information that is quite helpful. It's a matter of interest, not just to us, but the product. Everybody. You see, on the green road, and for the record that we're picking up, green road does not perform in a manner better, in a perspective of them as a fence. Where there are things, but I'm talking in a broader sense, yes, the same is taking place, but it's actually a development that we hear from the partners. You see, they then start asking them to pay for insurance, start to pay for airtime, where their talent protection comes in that environment. Well, generally to me, is the nature of the contract, which I thought that you'd be able to guide us. What type of contract that you have ever come in contact with over the country? Not getting into the negotiation, but also to express the elements of concern. That's what I can hear you. I'll come back to the 1st of April, but what is it? That's another component that I'd like to comment on. But the Green Road and the CPS relationship and the protection of the ordinary people, where does that start and end the pressure? Because there's quite a lot of issues. More than that, I would like to be really good person like that. So there's a lot of difficulties. We can pay our way now, CPF, and see what they're saying about the constitutional process. They also have the constitutional process. But CPF, belonging to other entities, they're on a role of trying to sell this information of CPF to other entities. Now, if you listen to the matrix, and that's what the environment there and what is happening. And we just made a traffic fine and made a court to take a full article judgment. Are we on the road to that environment? The relationship seems to be beginning to establish in this entity. Which is a serious concern for Parliament that we need to be able to take that very serious concern. Well, if we don't deal 17 million CPF, not in the hands of government, but where we don't know what implications does it have for the future of the country, what implications does it have for our democratic process in South Africa. So anyone who controls 17 million voters will undermine the democratic process, which means the project of South Africa of democracy can be out of the way at any time. Come 2019, that's my concern, that's my major concern for the nation. Where is this done? And who controls it? After I've seen the experiences of the American and other countries that are on election streets now, that's 2019, and nobody knows what the CPS, I mean the CPS, the president of the CPS, where does the protection come from? What does Treasury do within the particular environment? Protect, which is a constitutional obligation that we must protect, ordinarily the poor of the poorest. That's what Parliament must apply to me, which I was just looking at our rules, that Parliament must have a move. We have the power to investigate the scope, and maybe learning more from you, we have to recommend that Parliament take this matter quite seriously, because it's a security challenge. You see, that you can't give away the data of South Africa. I'm saying it will have political implications because if we will ever control the data now of the ordinary people, can win the election without compensation. That's the product political concern that other people have. If search, which I don't know where does this commitment lie, then the authorization by court. If ever this agenda is different, you want to give it to any other political party who wants to. I don't understand what this intention would have been, but what I don't understand from cabinet is that why would you allow the data or tell us where is the data exactly? The minister said it's halfway, but I mean, from what we hear, the data is not with SASA, our entity, and we don't have control over that. Would you give us that? Reflection that they are beginning to grasp power, the negotiation pattern has to take place. The note 3, which I, you know, there's that 8.1 and there's that 8.5. Yes. Serious and unexpected. And the 8.5. Do you think SASA has understood that environment? Or the motivation of the SASA case in relation to the 1st of April. Are they ready? Have they ever provided good reason? Because when we were listening to them in Scopa, we have not yet been convinced that they understood and have appreciated the environment that we are confronted with on the 1st of April. That's why ordinary South Africans, everybody is very concerned, because we have not yet a full statement that says this is what is going to happen. Now, if you bring in these technicalities of 8.1, 8.5, when I was reading them, it seems as if they will continue giving us hanging, not being certain from Treasury that have is the matter going to be resolved. What they are saying to us today means that we will give to the officials of the. My last question, the empowerment. rather than the frantic, which I believe that the procurement men can at least take us into confidence with Parliament. Is that happening within this particular thing? Because I wouldn't understand why the domestic economy is not being grown by this particular tender. It's a lot of money being given to multinational companies. What would be your view about that? I mean, because you know we've always drafted a lot of laws over some period. We were shocked when we learned that the ownership of Green Lord or CPS is not with South Africa, it's with multinational companies. And who is benefiting? The minister, when we asked her that who is benefiting in this particular deal, we're not being able to provide the effect. That is a huge concern again for me, that who benefits in this particular deal. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Mine is not directed that that is a treasure. Actually, it is directed to you. That at what stage are we going to to request or allow that is SASA CEO that is to fill in some of the gaps? Because the presentation from the minister was very clear. I understand the role of treasury. And he indicated that there are areas. Let me just indicate one simple point. On page 21 and 22 of the presentation. I'll start with 22, where National Treasury is saying it cannot that just provide us with information because they were not involved. Now for one to make and informed that is decision, it would be proper also to get some information that is from the CEO or of SASA. Now my question to you is, at what stage are we going to request him to make a presentation, or the purpose of today's meeting is merely to listen to the Minister of Finance?
Well, I hope that's the last person coming my direction. But anyway, let me just respond to you. No, we had invited the Minister of Finance and Institution. As for the CEO and the CFO, they are mostly crushing them. I'm not even sure whether the CEO is back at work or is still on sick leave. But I think we can check with him or with them and find out if they are comfortable to respond to anyone. We can check with them.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
And thanks for the presentation. But before I continue on I just want to, I've observed something and I just want to talk about my position. And I hope that you not be a problem with the tenor. Because if you speak with page 10, I think the minister emphasized the role of the tenor, which is different from what the court is saying. And if you would add, because the court has said you should be able to do, I would have a chance. I'm not saying you are wrong, but I'm just saying, if you could just be on the same time all of us, then you are doing your job as treasurer to make sure that the court is done and your money can be done, which is a main goal as treasurer. And to also say to the DG, please, when you are talking about the rules, don't be apologetic. There is nothing wrong with doing what you are supposed to be doing. I was dealing with Auditor General every day. And what they do, they actually know the details of each agreement. Because they are very full time in checking on the spending pattern of each department. So I was just saying, let us be clear about that. You're rolling for role and you probably have to change the role. And it's not because of our power. I wanted to make that clear. The second point that I want to speak is a form of clarity that I want to ask the minister. We were told by the minister that they have 50 million donations. And in your page, 70 million. And then 1 million that gets you money from the bank, and 50 million that don't have people. But in your presentation, I don't know what that is for. Page 26, we are talking about different numbers. So I need to understand the numbers. And I listened to her teacher. She said, pay beneficiaries, they are paying 16.84, which when you multiply that by 16 million, it does not meet 2.9 million per annum. And I just want to know how do we bring the two figures together? Because at some point they have to tell you, if you did less, X and Y should be, it's a formula that you have to do. And on top of that, the problem, the deviations that you spoke about, one of the deviations that I can think of is there was 3.5 million that was paid to VIP protection during when they were being asked to But again, we were made to believe, or maybe it's not so wrong, that CPF was doing that job on its own. Now it's doing work on all the cycle that is happening. My question is, we have a post-bank that's available everywhere in South Africa, not everywhere, but 80% of the post-bank. It's part of government, and they have almost 20 million, should I say, beneficiaries or customers. I don't know what they're called. But they can deal with 20 million. Why don't we have confidence in their own system, in our own system that we have in government, and saying the post office does not have enough capacity? What is it that we can do then as government to make sure the post office has got capacity to do what the CPS is doing? It has been proven, I think, as part of your presentation, that social development at the moment, they cannot do this on their own, so they still need help. But why do we have to outsource when we have our own resources? Because if it's profit, if there's any profit, by the way, it won't be profit to an individual, but it will be profit to the government. That's one. Because I thought, because I was asking myself, what is this? What can CPS have as a support system from any other company in South Africa? Now, you know, with your explanation, I think it helps to understand that it's not even their part doing that, but it's Greenland who are doing on they are doing that process. But, you know, the main question, just to emphasize what Professor Boyce has talked about, our pensioners, which is the people that we are having to help, when they go to those patrons, they have to pay what you call other amateurs. The loan shark, they are there in a form of those green rods or whoever they contact. And besides that, they are also paying burial society that they don't know anything about. If that Makulu dies today and you go to green rods or wherever and say, give us money because Makulu has been paying, that money is nowhere to be found. But again, if you are really allowed the CEO of Trotter, if you take that, don't take that to CPS. How does CPS get the database of government? And the minister last week said they do not have database. Database is held by CPS. Who gave CPS those names if government does not have those names? And is it allowed to know to do that? Yeah. Thank you.
Right, thanks. I'm not sure we can do everyone to go. Alright. Shulane. Wednesday.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Minister, for the presentation. I think I got two quick questions. But maybe, I think today is the meeting that will ask you a question. Just one question, maybe the meeting will address me, especially the member from the Chairperson, I just want to find out, has SASA and CKS agreed on a continuous continuous agreement with CPS going forward to the 1st of May. Just one, because it's getting mixed.
There is no agreement yet. There is intent. There is intention to, but there is no agreement.
Thank you, Chairperson. And it's difficult for me to ask a question, but I will ask Minister, in terms of this intent agreement that's supposed to happen, I want to link it to, it's like slide 16 on the deviation. When you look at deviation 8.1, it's where deviation can only be made if you invite competitive bids in case of an agent or a sole supplier. And when you also check 8.3, it talks about the sole source procurement, which may occur when there's evidence that only one supplier possesses the unique and singularly available capacity to meet the requirements of the institution. In my own mind, Honorable Minister, I will try to interpret 8.3 as CPS in the issue that we're discussing, the issue of SASA. But then that is why I asked the question to the Chairperson, if whether CPS and SASA have agreed in terms of this contract going forward from the 1st of April. Because one, in terms of tender processes that emanate from the Treasury regulation, is that a tender that is more than 500,000 should go for bidding. And then two, in terms of deviation, if a departmental entity must deviate, must get a permission from the National Treasury. And in this case, when you check that everything is done haphazardly, because probably maybe we didn't comply with the rulings that we have, or we didn't comply with the regulations, Treasury regulations and PFMA. So what I want to establish is that the legality point of view, in terms of the legal point, in terms of your PFMA, in terms of the bidding processes, what puts us because it's all of us, it affects, the matter affects either me and Parliament, it affects also the Treasurer. What does it put us in terms of complying with the regulation, the DGA? And then number two, the deviation. Because when you also check in terms of I think it's like 25, I'm just interlinking the Honorable Minister. Just want to apologize. apologize to this. I was just trying to link this question. When you check in terms of the budget, at bottom page, I think it's bottom page 10 as well. Look up of 10, but the deviation is 15. In terms of their budget, 30 plus minus percent of SASSA budget goes to contracts, and 70% goes to service delivery. So when you try to do the mathematical point of view, is that then it means in terms of this contract that is the intention to sign that contract with the bank, then it will take out the whole money of the department or entity, then it will affect service delivery. And I just want to find out on how does the deviation and the role of treasury help in this respect. In terms of my second question, in terms of the options, what is this option, the options which was agreed by the executive option? There were options in terms by the joint meeting which were held. Option one, I can see, and then option three, option this other one that talks about South African coastal buffer. The minister last week when we were meeting said that SACO is not ready to accept this grant. And I think by this option, the one that is option five that the joint team has agreed, is that the strength of SACO can deliver a certain element of the payment system over a period of time. So I just wanted to get a clarity in terms of this option in relation to the response that you have made. I think it is of public knowledge because there is a public. I don't know because the Reserve Bank might not be here, Chaperson, but I think the minister on their behalf will be able to and for now, those are my two questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks to the Minister of Finance. Now, firstly, Minister, you are referring to the deviation as one of the options that might be utilized. As I'm sitting here, I tell you that deviations are of emergencies, and those emergencies are often, you said it yourself, acts of God. And now we are sitting here facing a situation which is not an act of God. It is an act of an individual who refused to understand the law and who refused to follow the proper procedure. And now we are finding ourselves in a situation where we have to consider a national interest. But we have an individual that has been holding an AK-47 into our hands. So let's just say this deviation is considered. Is Treasury going to give this money to the very same people who have no desire to create systems within the department so that the Department of Social Development with SASSA can deliver the grant to the people on its own? They have no desire at all. On the 28th of February, we had a meeting here with SASSA, and the program manager clearly said they might have systems by 2019. And you are mentioning that you will only allow a deviation in the case where the time frame is very short. And I don't see it being shorter because now 2017, 2018, 2019, it might still not happen. So are you going to trust the very same people with that money? Are we going to fall into a trap of people that create a situation and then makes it an image? Number two, when I look also into the same deviation, when I look at page 29 of your presentation, page 21, where you are giving out the tender process timeline. If my calculations are correct, Minister, it took 10 months. And therefore, that also, it doesn't fall into a scope of a shorter period if we were to consider the deviation. Because a new tender will take at least 10 months for it to be finalized. And we still have the very same people who have no capacity to have systems, who do not have a desire to change the system from CPS. Now, upon receipt of the first letter, Minister, I understand you gave it to the DG, apply your mind, they responded. We cannot do 1, 2, 3 because it's unlawful. You need to go back to court, constitutional court, and follow the procedure. Then they write to you again. I just want to find out from you, Minister. You're mentioning a bilateral on the 28th of July. Were you involved in that bilateral meeting? Or was there any time last year or this year when you realized that there's a crisis looming where you have met with the Minister of Social Development or perhaps met with some parties that are involved, including the president, just to find a way to keep the situation, or else try to direct that you need to follow a proper procedure. You can't do this in any other way. Then, lastly, Chairperson, on the Green Road and the interest that it gets out of the money which Treasury sends to us. One, they benefit. Now, it's very clear why the CEO of Green Road, of CPS, was so arrogant in an interview last week when he was asked the question, why are you jumping from 16 rand to 22 rand? The CEO said, no, that's according to CPI. And seated here, I do not understand those calculations. What kind of CPI is he using? Which will allow him to say, if SASSA wants to use me, they will pay 22 rand. And seated here, it gives me information that he knows he's the only person available or the only alternative to this South African country to give out grants for whatever reason, whether it's a deviation or whether it's an extension. And that assurance or that confidence which the CEO of CPS has is granted to him by the department itself. Why did the department go and have a meeting with them with the intention of getting the prices and extension? So, Minister, here we're dealing with a situation that is not so, it's not vague, it's a very clear cut. That someone is busy driving this vehicle into a ditch, and all of us must just go blinded. Must just all follow the person and go into a ditch. Also, Minister, please, can you assist us with this 22 rand? Will you allow a situation where CPS is being paid 22 rand per person from 15 rand? That's a daylight robbery. Thank you for me.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. As I've been saying, the outset, thank the Minister and Treasury for what I consider to be a very thorough breakdown of the realities that we are confronting. I think we live here a little bit wiser in terms of what we are confronting. I read this on the basis of facts in terms of where this crisis actually is. And Chair, stated you. Because of what to try and micromanage the development when they're not here. And so, but Minister, as you go to the any main actor is as good as a supporting actor and give them that support. So, I'm going to ask very pointed questions. The first question is, in terms of the current budget reality of the country, all over the Minister was very frank in the budget speech about how we need to put forward. Is there additional funding available with the daylight robbery which my colleague has referred to? Because the budget has been made in Alex, you know, and now we are confronted with the threat of an ungodly escalation which seeks to work. CPS is a bunch of crooks in the Zona Collection. They are thieves. They've taken money from people, airtime, funeral, cover, and also other things. People are receiving those grants. Every day there is an outcry. So they are robbing the people and working the state. So the question is, do we have money for this now, you know, new arrangement, which is secondly, of the six options that we put together by the charity, which one did the Treasury find most favorable? Or which combination did the National Treasury consider to be the combination we can take up out of this fund money? So when are the options listed in the order of preference? If not, what those six, which one? Constitutional court or no constitutional, the contract was bound to expire. Now the question left
actually this is 409 contract points, and whether the SASSA made the commitment that they would take over the gas, which we all know now is a low line, fabrication of the highest order. But that contract management, what assistance was provided by National Treasury to guide the tendering process? Because this tender took over 2 years, and last week we were told here that it is abnormal for a tender process, and the procurement office is assisting as well. It is still in 90 days. It just became an open-ended arrangement. So, no, we'll take as long as we can. Because my view is that prevention is better than cure. So we have now arrived at this situation. So I want to actually get to what extent was National Treasury engaged, what advice we get to guide that tender process, which then we find that it is a botched tender process. The capacity of have the necessary capacity to actually engage with the presentation of the grant, and then to say what type of assistance can then be given to build capacity. I think that's the important thing, actually. If you want to build in-house, and I say in-house, South African capacity, it's the kind of situation where American, Australian companies are looking billions and billions of grants out of our country. So what could ultimately be a very simple exercise? Finally, Chair, Minister, you raised eyebrows when it was to be said that the money is there for 5 days, 11.5 billion, 11.2 billion. Gathering for who? For the why? For the robot, really, for what? So we are making money within making money. So I want to then get, is there the possibility of us entering into a discussion with the bank, we are fighting as an option, to exempt beneficiaries and recipients from such the bank charge, really to go and charge to charge
Please, when you have the opportunity to talk, you want to listen, so allow me to talk.
So to provide that type of information, I think ours is to cushion, you know, the challenges of our people, alleviate them. Now if you're going to charge, if they charge grant is 300 pages, and you go and charge bank charges on that as well, yet you are saying you want the banks to assist, what models of subsidize those charges can be brought forward? But at the end of the day, we need to speak in the interest of the beneficiary. Again, a system which will seek to make money out of the beneficiary, they have to show that. Just conclude by saying, Minister, whatever happens, I would find it to be a great injustice to us if EPS continues to be the service provider. One member of Parliament, Chair, Mother, passed away 2 years ago. She's been paying to this broker, Funeral Parlour, since 2004. When they went to claim the election loss, that broker, Funeral Parlour, said the benefits due to you is 1,200. From 2004. And because he had the capacity to go and challenge that to the lawyer, he was able to get a fair amount too. What happens to those beneficiaries who do not have that legal master access to legal recourse to challenge this giant of the thief, CPS, who is able, because we're giving billions of
able to challenge the system at every court, at every legal. So when treasurer's responsibility is for us to receive service providers who want capacity, but then the final analysis must also ensure that those service providers act in the national interest and act on behalf of our people. So I plead on behalf of those people, do not give up. There are a bunch of these crooks who are helping them from those in the system and abuse them.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to echo the comments of my colleagues by thanking Treasurer for being here this morning and also for bringing your A team. Certainly all the right people in here, hopefully for the right answers. Just in regard to the CEO of SASA being here, I'm glad he is here. You must know that he will still account to us on 1.1 billion rand worth of recent expenditure, but that will be for another time, so your time with us is not over soon. I'm also glad the Treasury is here, sir, because, Chair, because some of the questions may be able to answer them. Minister, I'm going to deviate from making speeches and I'm going to ask questions. And my questions generally are to the point, and often I require simple yes or no answers. Please take note of the questions, but you don't have to give long responses. So I can spare you that. I'd like to go back to 2013, Minister, and this can be, anybody in your team can answer who's well placed to do this. I do understand, Minister, that you're not operationally involved in every single aspect of finance as you should be. So you're a very good team here, I'm sure they will assist. Right, so 2013. At this stage, the Minister of DSD established an advisory committee after SASA decided they were going to go on their own. My question is the various members of the community were appointed onto that particular advisory committee. One of them was Dr. Mkhozi-Khoza, a current sitting MP. She was then an MPL. She received 500,000 rand for the first part of the contract. Received 500,000 rand for the second part of the contract. She did not declare the second amount or the first amount in the members' interests, and certainly not in the members' interests here. She declared receiving transport compensation. I would just like to ask a question from Treasury. Do you feel that's appropriate? That's question number one. Question number two is the Minister then wrote. After the advisory committee done their work, she then wrote a letter to Virginia Peterson, and she indicates, and I have the letter here and I can quote from it. The letter reads as follows: I've decided that in order to roll out implementation process diligently, we need to retain the collective knowledge and institutional memory of key members of the committee. Given their knowledge and expertise, these members will lead the work streams and will work jointly with you and SAS executive management team associates to ensure the various work streams are adequately resourced to execute their respective mandates in a speedy manner without any disruption and to minimize delays in implementation of further recommendations. The letter goes on to say, to this end, and this is the important part, to this end I have decided to retain the services of the following individuals who are part of the committee for the implementation of the third recommendations. Mr. Andile Nyonya, team leader, Mr. Tim Sukazi, Ms. Tankiso Pakis, Mr. Sidra Shazi, Mr. Patrick Mounier. Right. So now, that was the instruction from the Minister to appoint members of the advisory committee as leaders of the work streams. Now, I know Mr. Human Trip, I'm sure, will be aware of the entire work stream story. The question is was it appropriate, number one, for the Minister to instruct the CEO to set up a work stream like that, because surely she would be predetermining who got the work wrong. Because that went along with the companies that got the work stream work. And as we know, that amounts to 47 million rand in that, a sizable amount of money, and certainly above the 500,000 rand threshold. The second question is, does Treasury believe it's appropriate that members of an advisory committee then get the work? Because effectively they're advising the minister to give them work. so the appropriateness around that scenario. Then I have to take, you know, this was an engagement today and I'm glad it is, but I have to take issue with Jenny. Because in the report that you so kindly gave us this morning on page 30, in terms of letters with DSD stroke SASA and OCP,
which page?
30, 30, check. The third item down, the second off the page, which is with DSD stroke SASA and OCPO. Third item down is 23 June 2016. The essence of that section is that the Office of the Procurement Officer approved the deviations. So to give that context, the Minister wrote a letter to the CEO predetermining whom they got the work stream with. The result, the letters after that, from the CEO to various other parties, in fact to the BAC, said, the Minister has asked this, please make sure it is so. Please heed the declaration. Okay, please heed the instruction. The BAC then responded to saying, yes, we will do so. And they referred to procurement policies they have. My concern with the pronouncement of the OCPO is, how on earth did you possibly approve that? And give that condemnation. Because it starts with the Minister predetermining who gets the bids before he's ever bidden. There's no competitive bidding process. And I don't see any reference to the BFMA. So if you could just please give us hopefully a very good explanation. And then also I note in that same section there, you say that you raised the concerns, which are whether the consultant rates were assessed for reasonableness, okay, and whether the potential bidders were not discriminated, whether other potential bidders were not discriminated. So those are two very, very salient concerns, and clearly the answer would be reasonableness was certainly not looked at because there was no bidding process. There was no BEC, it just went straight to BAC. And certainly there was no other potential bidders selected being involved. So how can your office, with the greatest of respect, I know today's a friendly engagement, say that you're a cabinet, and what is the status on those concerns? Have you changed your mind? Are you still very, very concerned? Okay, so that handles that. Then I'd like to get to the issue of receivables. Last week, the Minister of DSD indicated that she didn't want to do work with the banks because Standard Bank reports, according to her, owes SASA 500 million rand. And Itala Bank owes SASA 1.1 billion rand. Now, I'm sure that would pop up a receivable somewhere. That's a sizable sum of money. Is Treasury or the AG aware of such receivables anywhere on these books? I see that the AG representatives here are the ones specifically dealing with social development. So they can perhaps comment, because I'm just trying to test the validity of that statement by the Minister. Itala the day after denied it, so if we can just get the facts there, because that was the rationale for not using the banks. I think it's pretty important to clarify if that's true. Then, my colleagues have covered this partially, but I just want to... another statement that was made by the Minister last week is that there were numerous meetings held by SASA and the Treasury were invited. And she said, but Treasury didn't come. Now, Minister, your presentation indicates can you please confirm for me, whoever is well placed to do that, were there any mini meetings where you were invited by SASA to be involved in working out the solution to the problem where you simply just didn't arrive? And that's pretty much a yes or no answer. And if you didn't, if it's a no answer, maybe you can tell us why you didn't. Then the next question. I'm winding up now. It's very simply, have you ever been presented with a financial model by anyone? from SASA side, a payment model. Have you actually sat down and said with the relevant people and said, okay, this is where we are, this is what we're doing? Or are we literally still waiting for this court decision? Has there been any negotiation, discussion, even pending, you know, with the understanding that pending the court decision, this is what we can try and put together? Has any engagement like that happened? And I know it's a tricky one because Jesse Delabont said in his stakeholders meeting on the 10th of February this year, the transcript of which we have because it's a public company, he said that there have been numerous conversations with SASA and CPS in the past, but these conversations were kept secret because Treasury wouldn't understand the complexity of the issues, which frankly I think is a bit insulting to yourselves. Because I'm sure you can understand the complexities. So it just begs the question, has there been any meaningful engagement on this to try and find a solution? And then finally, my final question, it doesn't relate to CPS, but it relates to something else very important. In our engagement with SASA, I'm using the opportunity to bridge you here, I'd like to be much on this. And maybe Mr. Hillman, you can help. In our engagement in November, we discussed the payment of 316 billion rand to CPS by SASA. At the time, it was initially SASA asked for condemnation of that amount, which was granted by Treasury. Treasury then came back and said, now hang on a second, we've got some issues, and sent us a set of questions. That was then declared to be a regular expenditure. Then I believe there was a to and fro, and some more questions were asked, and then Treasury has come back with a final statement on that. And Mr. Blakey's at that time, I believe, mentioned that he believed that Treasury was on the brink of declaring that free to waste. So can we just get an update on that? Is it my irregular? Is it free to waste? Is it confirmed? What is the story on the thing with the Treasury on the 216 million that was paid by SASA to CPS, I believe, in 2015? 40. Okay, thank you, Chair. That's it.
Brooke.
Thank you,
Chair.
Just to check with the Minister whether the Minister and his delegation agree with me that we are currently facing a crisis on accountability. Perhaps a crisis if we ask in a lack of credibility. And then ultimately, as we sit here today, 7 days ago, there were no contact. Currently in this country today, there is no contact. Are we also facing, and would you agree with me that we are facing a crisis in terms of uncertainty in the country, especially for those people depending on the ground? And I've noted from my colleagues their concern with regards to this, but I would like to talk to the interventions of Treasury with regards to the timing of the interventions. You see, Minister, since 2014, the court ruling was that the contract is illegal, it's unlawful. And if I look at Section 885, Chapter 10 of the DFMA, there's certainly an obligation of the Minister of SASA, Minister Lamini, to make regulations prescribing to the manner, form, and circumstances in which allegations and disciplinary and criminal charges of financial misconduct must be reported to National Treasury. Now, in my view, when there's a court case that finds the contract to be unlawful, it borders on criminal activity, it borders on irregular expenditure, and then it should be reported to National Treasury and AG. Now, my question is, did the Minister perhaps report those misconduct in terms of the supply chain management, 2014 to 2013, and
I
said to
the agency. Just a minute, I made it clear like this to talk for several minutes. The members of the COVID group complain about not complying. I'm asking the people, maybe a simple request. But you were stopped in because there's a phone ringing.
What we find in this regard, Minister, is financial mismanagement, incompetency, the non-compliance of legislation, but also the disregard for a court finding by Minister Dlamini that has stunned the nation, and I believe should have been reported to Minister to Treasury and HR. Let's just make sure whether the Minister has fulfilled that obligation, and if not, whether she is then in breach of the Public Finance Management Act. The current situation, as I said, still in crisis and uncertainty. With disregard for Treasury, I would like to ask you, Minister, at any stage that you had personal interaction with the Minister, did you speak at any stage face to face with each other? And also noting that there were several interventions also from the legal advisor from the President, advising to the contrary to legal opinions from Mr. Fengler, Mr. Ali had an opinion that we should continue with the CPS. And it's very difficult to gauge what the intervention and the strategy should be in this regard. How difficult is that intervention? Does it put you in a very precarious position? And what would your views be with regards to the intervention of certain and several legal opinions in this regard? The new technical task team, Minister, it's interesting to note that there could be consensus with regard to the technical task team. I would like to know with regard to the mediation, which is key in resolving the irregular expenditure for the future. Is there currently a consensus in that technical task team that we will approve the mediation as you speak, you mentioned the technical task team? Or are you awaiting the court verdict of tomorrow? And then lastly, perhaps what to a certain extent petrified me last night is to see that the submission from SASA to the court indicates that there's a request for an oversight role with regards to the public protector's involvement and the AG involvement. How does it include national treasury? And is it not the primary role of national treasury, and specifically the procurement officer in national treasury, to evaluate the contract? And then also the application in terms of the cost of the contract and financial matters in the contract. I believe that the contract has only been submitted 20 days as from yesterday. If I understand, that was due to the press statement for the contract. What is the position with regards to the supply chain management of Treasury with regards to these uncertainties created by this application of yesterday? And are you waiting for the contract to announce before you can make any meaningful decision and give us any guidance as to the validity of the new contract and whether that could perhaps regular expenditure be avoidable, noting that the regular expenditure in the last year ballooned from 24 billion to 46 billion, and this is what we are working with in terms of our public finance management, reduce the regular expenditure, which could ultimately lead to corruption. Okay.
Thank you very much, comrade. I'm sure two things with that. I'm sure after you comrade to you and to the clarity on allow them to. The one part comrade is the minister, I think the position is supposed to leave tonight. In terms of the economy.
I also agree that maybe let's talk to this Green Rod bank and the interest that is approved out of the money that I'm taking. They make money out of those contracts, they make money from these crooked deals that they have around their time. It's incredible. And I know that that's what you said happened. And it was time of slavery, I'll say the same. And I don't understand how you want to speak to a company clearly demonstrating that you have. Somehow you don't want to get up with that thing. You just don't understand the politics behind it. Or when you are in cabinet and you discuss with him, how do you discuss the politics around the fact that this company is behavior that does not respect government, does not respect the public? It is totally a parasitic kind of relationship in that issue. And also the issue of the churches. My understanding is that the 16.4% was charged to also take care of the infrastructure that the company had to set up. And that infrastructure is now set up. What they need to actually expect more money from the I see the other five that you the letters that you wrote to me. I'm interested to hear your articulation of the last paragraph of your letter. Your observations and concerns, which I actually stated, about the role that the minister is going to play in relation to administration. And to say, in that situation, this is not the cost of the fiasco we're having. That is the political hand which is the administration, not the source of this movement to fight us that we're having. And that if that is the case, then therefore, that is the minister then which will be held personally accountable and not combat and then the second letter, the second paragraph, your concern about the fact that from the very beginning the approach of pipeline department is to start with a single option. That is a single option. That takes us to one of my problems that we spoke to. That we are now stuck with plastic. It then appears that right from the beginning there was no intention to look at any other option but this specific option called CPS. And it might be interesting to find out what the responses were from the information to the which I find very, very clear because they imply that our administration problem is actually political. It is the political noses get into administration matters that create all the problems. You look at leadership, who is the court? Who is it's the same mess. Billions of rent. Critical national security information in the hands of a private company that is showing the negative of the state. Contracts with billions and billions of rent. Now we have the property battle also playing with that power. So I'm just saying these observations are quite crazy. It would be interesting to check how the report from the other side. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Let me attempt to speak through as many questions as possible, and if you agree, my colleagues will say we can keep us, so to speak, and in other instances they know more than I do about some of the issues raised. The first point we want to make is certainly that we want to, as soon as possible, remove the sense of uncertainty and crisis and give the assurance to the 17 million beneficiaries of the social grant system that they will receive their social grants on the 1st of April. It is for this reason that the ministerial task team was set up. It is for this reason that you now have a technical task team. As you know, Minister Adebe chairs the ministerial task team. And our objective, as I said at the outset, is to ensure that our higher duty to the certain public is executed in the right kind of way, as far as possible, within the current framework of the law, and where that framework might be constraining, and we must get the courts to agree with us that as a so-called interim or temporary measure, certain things have to be done to ensure that the payment happens on the 1st of April. So a combination of the political process and the judicial process within the next, I think, 5-6 days, hopefully, will give us absolute certainty about payment. And we must all have that as our common objective. We will then have to sort out who's responsible, why, what happened, and so on. So our first objective needs to be on the 1st of April, that money must be paid. There's enough time thereafter to get to either some of the facts that we are asking for or some of the explanations that we are looking for, or in your case, to establish who was responsible for what, because that's your job, not ours, if I may say so with great respect. So if we can just remove this this issue which pervades many of the questions, and certainly from our side we will do whatever we can to contribute to this. I'm sure there are many within SASA who have similar objectives, and in the government system more generally as well. So that's the first point. In response to your question, the joint task team, I imagine you're referring to the December process that the DG was involved with. In a sense, that will transition into the new technical task team, and their work will be taken over by, and so the personalities will be the same. As you recall, I said earlier on that that task team will now explore, firstly, how do we make sure payment happens on the 1st of April? Secondly, set up a negotiating process for whatever way forward is determined through the deviation process. And thirdly, to ensure what's the most appropriate model. And that appropriate model must consider all of the options that the honorable members have talked about, whether it is a bank, many banks, post office, combination, all of those possibilities must be considered. And if you call the CEO of the post office to appear before you, he will give you some insight into his thoughts on the matter and assurances about what they could deliver in X month's time as well. But I don't want to speak on their behalf. I think it might be interesting for you to actually do so. When you say that we have to avoid the previous negotiations a few weeks ago between SASA and CPS, that's purely on the legal basis that a procurement process needed to be entered into first, in this instance an application for a deviation in terms of that paragraph 8 that we had outlined for you. And secondly, arising from the outcome of that deviation process, to then get down to the next question, which is what's the mandate of the negotiating team? What's the money numbers that we will be looking at? And thirdly, what are the outcomes that we're looking for from the negotiating process and conduct the negotiating process as well? So that's the process that is intended by the ministerial task team. I'm not going to pass any political judgment, if you don't mind. I leave that to you. in terms of the facts that have been put forward. On the Grindrod issue, I must just raise one caution. We are merely asking the question. If money is sitting in an account for 5 days, it should be accruing interest. If it is, where does that interest go? So we need to establish that fact. We're not making any assertions at this point. Yesterday, as we were trying to follow the step by step, we began to discover that there is this 5 day period. On average, it might be shorter in some months, it might be longer in other months. CPS and its behavior, in particular of its CEO, many of you have commented on that. Ideally, I should not be commenting on it. But I would certainly send a message to the shareholders in Net1 CPS that the shareholders should ask some tough questions about the public utterances of the CEO and some of the gross statements that are actually made, and that it's your perception that they appear to be extremely arrogant and disrespectful to govern, from which govern they make 2 billion runs in terms of the contact that they have. So the shareholders are known. Some of them have been named and questions have been asked. Is that the conduct they want to identify themselves with? Is that the brand, if you like, that they want to earn through this particular interaction with government? And I don't think that we are involved in child's play. We're talking about 17 million people who depend on these grants on a day-to-day basis, as we all know, for their own welfare and well-being. On the question of 1644 and the infrastructure setup, I think SASA is best placed to give you more details in this regard. It's a logical question. If you spend 5 years developing, and even the period before that, some kind of infrastructure for payment, what new needs to be done? And if, in particular, the legal advice is that given the invalidity of the initial tender, any new interim arrangements must be for as short a period as possible, what new costs need to be incurred in order to prosecute the new mandate that you might actually get. In relation to the letter that you referred to, I think the point we're making there is to share amongst colleagues that procurement is a business of officials. And whether you are in a municipality or whether you are in a provincial government or in an entity, that dividing line needs to be clearly understood. And if we respect and understand that dividing line, we get ourselves into less trouble at the end of the day. And we show greater respect both for the law, for the use of public funds, and for procedures that have been outlined in terms of good governance within any institution as well. In terms of SASA pursuing a single option, again, those who made that decision must explore that. All we were saying is that at a moment like, say, early December, when we became more integrally involved, the Director General and other officials, and considered and evolved those 6 options that we've actually put before you, you need to look at all of those options and see, on the one hand, which is the most effective in getting across the grants to 17 million beneficiaries or 10.5 million recipients, and secondly, which is the most cost-effective way of actually doing so. And that would clearly be the mandate of the task team when they get into negotiation. Honourable Ross, and I've addressed the question of crisis. I'm going to ask for help from my colleagues about whether we had a report in terms of the CFMA on the invalidity of the contract. I'm not aware of that immediately, or we might have to research it and come back to you. There were several colleagues, honourable members, that asked questions about our involvement, which meetings we attended, and so on. Personally, I was approached in early January at an ANC meeting by the minister to say that we need to discuss this matter. and then I was given access to, given two legal opinions and I think two documents which outlined the new system, if you can call it that, and then a series of interactions over the telephone and by letter began to be initiated, including interactions amongst the officials themselves. The president did convene a meeting and then he issued a statement after that. I think two Saturdays ago, at which the two ministers were present, an official, and where we briefed him on developments to date. And of course, subsequently, the Ministry of Tarski was established, which took over the function on a more collective basis. Mr. Ross asks, you know, has the task team approved the deviation? As my colleagues will explain to you, nobody other than the officials who have been delegated that responsibility in the Treasury make that decision on the basis of information before the officials. So neither I nor any technical task team outside of the Treasury can say we decided that you shall give the deviation. Those accountable for that process working under the Director General of the Treasury will ultimately make the decision on the basis of the information that they have and the reference to the right part of the law as is actually required. On the point of clarity around the oversight role, I'm not sure if it's the fact that you've been given, but the Constitutional Court, I think last Thursday, so they're about issued a set of questions and asked the Minister and Tata to respond to those questions. And amongst those questions is, what is your view about who should play the supervisory role? It's in that context that the Minister and Sasa have responded and said that they will propose the Auditor General, the Public Protector, or anybody else that the court might suggest. If I remember, that's the response that was given. So the question of oversight is that the court can decide on anybody else that they would think appropriate. Yeah, it's quite strange that the CPS says that details on anything might only be available 20 days after. So we just put it in the strange box and leave it there for a while until we can answer those questions better. Forgive me if I get the pronunciation wrong, Honourable. The protocol. Yes, no. But you did make lots of statements, if I may say so with respect. I think several of your questions were directed to the phenomenon of the advisory committee, the transition to the leadership of work streams. I'm not familiar with all of those details. If someone of my colleagues are, to the extent they are, they will give you that information. And the matter of Dr. Koza is really a parliamentary matter, which the Ethics Committee should consider if you think that's appropriate. I don't think we are in a position to give you an opinion on that. So your question was, is it appropriate for the Minister to predetermine? If there was predetermination, no. But let me see what information we have in the rest of the delegation that would help you with that. Was it appropriate in any other situation, I'm going to add those words, for just transitioning from one type of role to another type of role where a competitive process is required? It's clearly no. You then make reference to slide 30, so the relevant official will respond to that. Then your point about receivable, I think that my colleagues will add to this as well. The issue here really is that there are bank accounts, money was paid into those bank accounts that belonged to people who were receiving grants, but those monies were not withdrawn by the people receiving the grants. So the money sits in that particular account, and I think there are similar phenomena elsewhere, in pension funds, for example. So if you talk to the Financial Services Board, they will also tell you there are lots of unclaimed benefits that lie in different types of pension funds. And how you balance making sure that the money remains there for those who might want to claim it versus using it for some other purposes until they claim it versus bringing it back into the National Revenue Fund in that service is the dilemma that we often find ourselves in. But let me see if the technical people have more insight into those processes. Invitations to SASA meetings. Again, I don't attend these sorts of meetings, so my colleagues can fill you in on that wherever it's appropriate. Now, when you talk about, Honourable Member, the financial model, I wanted to get some clarity from you. In terms of payment on 1st of April, so that will depend on the deviation, the negotiation with CPS after the deviation decision is made, if it is approved, and certainly anything the court might say as well, because there are strictures that the court has placed in the April 2014 judgment that will have to be taken into account, which it might vary or might not vary. So I think let's wait for the court decision to give us some clarity. And CPS, of course, is making its own claims and taking its own claims to the public domain as well. The 316 million rounds, somebody can comment on that as well. Honourable Schlengler, do we have the money? Our initial set of interactions around this issue is that SASA might well have the money within its own pool, let's put it that way, depending on what we're talking about. So, again, if our imperative is to pay the grant and make sure that nothing is happening that is disruptive of that process, we will have to come back to you and indicate whether something extraordinary has to be done to ensure that funds need to be found. But I think currently our view would be that, and this happens in many departments, Chair, where they say we have a squeeze and then our officials help them to understand where money can in fact be accessed from their own funds as well, and similar things would be done. In terms of the six options, the DG will address that question and which is the most favorable. But I imagine that the criteria will be cost effectiveness and effectiveness. And what are the current facilities available without building some extraordinary empire? I address the panic issue. I don't think we should generate panic at all. I'm sure that as a country between the, as I said, judicial process, the executive process, and the administrative processes, we'll find a way to make sure that grants are paid on the 1st of April and do so in as transparent a way as possible so that everybody's aware of how we've arrived at those sorts of arrangements. On the question of contract management and the expiry of the contract, I think, again, these are issues that SASA is best placed to actually answer. But to the extent that the Treasury might have had a role in this, they will explain to you. SAPO, I've addressed this issue before. I think it might be very useful for you to actually invite the CEO and the recommendation. And I think that they have some interesting ideas which would enable them to play a good public sector role in this regard as well. The interest issue, as I said earlier on, we need to get more information in this particular regard. And we will share your concerns about the so-called cross-selling and the utilization of information about beneficiaries. And that is one of the issues that I think one of the parties who wants to join the process tomorrow in the Constitutional Court is raising as well, and we will be equally concerned about, because we believe that, that any information about the 17 billion beneficiaries is the property of government. It's not the property of any private company. And that is a matter that needs to be settled in the course of the processes that, that we actually follow. Honourable Mente, again, you addressed the deviation issue, and we agree with you that this is certainly no act of God, as 8.2 indicates, but I think the CEO or acting CEO of SASA have applied their minds to which part of paragraph 8 they are using as the basis for their application, and consideration will then be given to that by the relevant officials within the Treasury. We are not, in inverted commas, giving money to anybody unless A, it is appropriated by Parliament itself. And so remember, the appropriation happens either to social development as a department or SASA as an entity. And you as Parliament can hold them to account as to how that money is actually spent. But we do want to be frank with the public and yourselves that you face, and we face, a contingency as far as the 1st of April and maybe a few months after that is concerned, and special measures will have to be put into place to ensure that grants are in fact paid as all of us desire. That the recipients would actually get the money that they are entitled to get through this particular system. You pointed out that how long the tender process takes as far as Section 21 is concerned. I think all of those are issues that are not necessarily predetermined. They can be managed within different time frames and in a transparent way as well, which is what the court is probably going to require in terms of any new tender preceding the current processes. The July bilateral, the officials will adjust that. I was not there. July 2016, which is a question you've asked. They've also asked questions about other meetings. I've explained that earlier on. CPS and the arrogance of the CEO, I'm sure he's getting the message from you. Loud and clear, so I don't need to add anything to that. So thank you very much for those questions. Honorable Kundo, thank you for reassuring us that we're doing our job, because hopefully continue to do so. You've asked about how people are paid. I don't think I followed that question, but if somebody else says they can pick it up from us. Why can't the post office do the distribution? I've addressed that question earlier on. And it would be ideal if we could build a system of payment and interaction with the public around the post office and other financial facilities that we have, including some of the ideas that some of you have had about what kind of charges should commercial banks levy on what are the poorest amongst the South African society. And it's an issue that we would certainly like to pick up with the financial sector as well. And you could do that also. Some of them are sitting somewhere else in the building here, talking to the Standing Committee on Finance as well. Your point about pay points and Oceanitas and the kind of role that they play, as do others, is a valid one, and I'm sure that these are issues that we all need to address as we go forward, not in the next couple of years, but in the next few months, so that we clear up who is entitled to what and who isn't entitled to what. And the financials of Net One Stock CPS certainly shows that they profit in two streams. The first stream is from the payment of grants, and the second stream is the so-called cross-sell process as well. And that's really open in the public documents that are available. A question of information I've addressed already. Honorable Chulwane, has SASSA CPS already agreed on the way forward? As I said, what we're looking at is a mechanism that will take us into the next few months and create an environment where there's certainty about the fact that people will receive their grants. While that is happening, the task team that will work under the ministerial task team will consider other options which can take over from this temporary option. And thirdly, we have to wait for the court's judgment on tomorrow's hearing to see what other parameters we have to work with. I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on that process as well. The SAPO issue also, I've explained to you, and perhaps, as I said, SAPO is the best place to speak for themselves, because we might not understand all of their internal mechanisms and how prepared they are and how prepared they could be into the future. Honorable Boyce, questions, which is the last one that I'll be addressing. I've addressed the question of CPS selling other products, and we don't have any role on this because it depends on the kind of contract that was signed in 2012. Perhaps you want to get a copy of that contract and have a look at what kind of commitments have been made on both sides. I'm not sure if you've actually done that. CPS selling information, I've addressed that question as well, and it's a concern that I say that we share, but that information should belong to the state. And I think we should be absolutely clear on that. The procedures, as far as deviation is concerned, we've addressed as well. That as soon as possible, we will give an answer to the application. But what we might want to just underline for you, there is a misperception that something needs to happen in the next day or two in terms of Treasury passing on money through the system. But remember the slides where we point out how money flows and when money flows. So money from the Treasury through the accounts held at the South African Reserve Bank only starts flowing 3 working days before the date of payment. So there's no immediate urgency, even in the next week, which threatens the eventual payment of grants on the 1st of April as well. So that was quite a revelation for us as we began to understand that process. And that's part of the assurance that I think all of us should give to the public, that even that process is at hand and is under control as well. On the question of empowerment and so on, I'm going to ask the Deputy Minister to address that. But, you know, there is a challenge that we have politically in South Africa. When we use slogans to communicate, then the slogans can become very misleading. So, you know, you are pink monopoly capital and he's green monopoly capital and she's black monopoly capital. And I can carry on, red monopoly capital and so on. But that's not really the issue. The slogans are not the issue. What are the facts of life? What is the current factual situation about ownership patterns and benefit patterns in South Africa? And transformation is about changing all of that and giving new sets of opportunities to people who've been excluded in these processes. So I think all of us can play a very helpful role to demystify these issues for the South African public, because we can mislead them by using slogans. And it can mask all sorts of things, as you are discovering in your inquiry as well. So if I say that with great respect. So to round up, Chair, from my side, I can come back at the end after the officials have addressed you. We should ensure that there is no crisis. We should ensure that there's a climate of certainty, that grants will be paid on the 1st, that there are political processes through the task team headed by Minister Adebe and the technical team headed by his DG. And we've mapped out very clearly for you what we need to do as an interim measure and what we need to do in the medium term. And we've also outlined for you that a lot will depend on the Constitutional Court judgment arising from the hearings tomorrow. We've also indicated that information about beneficiaries should belong to government, not to anybody else. And we join you in sending a message to the shareholders of this company that they should become more respectful and understand the sensitivity of the issues that we are dealing with. So that, because it's not just a money-making exercise. Part of this, as the court says, is that once you enter into delivering a constitutional right, which is what CPS is doing, they also become an organ of state, so to speak. And as an organ of state, they also have an element of not just accountability to shareholders, but accountability to the South African public as well, in terms of the way utterances are made. And I'm sure with you we can communicate that loud and clear. So let me move to my left now with your permission, Chair.
Yeah. I'd like to I thought this is to me myself, so give us the
now I'm going to come to the chair, but I'm just summarizing. In Greenwood, I think the major shareholder is Remgro, and Greenwood Investments, and Mr. Ross of PIC participating, and a couple of other companies. And the building of CTS is the larger portion of it is owned by NetOne, and then there's a smaller portion of the orange of local there. You must remember that in the constitutional court process, the issue about the concept of empowerment, the empowerment intervention of CPS is also such a matter of the
issue. Thank you very much. Just writing on what Inessa was saying on the project, connected to Honorable Chamber's question. More often than not, you know, in the conversation, and because we get involved, people think that this is about money and money not being available. I just want to make this point very, very, very clear. There is money for paying the grants. There is money for paying whomsoever pays the grants. Parliament has before it an appropriation bill that will then legally authorize us to draw that money from the National Revenue Fund and to pass it to social development. The issue is not about that money. If, for instance, let's say, and this is in the very unlikely event, I want to underline, oh, in the very unlikely event that the money that EMR to pay service providers were to get exhausted, which, if it were to happen, it would be next year. In other words, towards the end of the financial year. Because the 2.3 billion, I think, is the money that's set aside for this now. Right? You can just divide it by 12. Roughly, it gives you a sense. It is a lot of money. It will take a long time to exhaust it, but if it were to be exhausted, in the unlikely event that it were to be exhausted, there is a route through which it can be augmented, which is first looking within the department or SASA, is there money somewhere that can be moved to this gate? And the minister said there was lots of that. And secondly, if you go beyond that, then it can be looked into the system. So, I say this because before you realize it, we think that there is a problem. There isn't a problem of money. We are not here because, as President, to talk about that part at all. Let there be no confusion about it. Because before you realize it, you know, because we're here, not you, because you know the process, but elsewhere in people's heads, we say, these heartless people, there is no money to pay the grant. The money to pay the grant is there. The money to pay a service provider to deliver the grant is there. What doesn't exist is a contract to make sure that those things happen. That is what at play. So it's really important to clarify. Now, there was a question asked We frown at illegal deduction. We have a process even now, Honorable Board, to try and understand more deeply, you know, what illegal deductions exist in the system. Why is it that, because we've been trying to tighten the rules on these things, and, you know, tighten the regulations. But every time you write the rules, then people cleverly find a way to find a gap. And you are right, they are offensive. They are, you know, not supposed to happen. But and we have a role to kind of help define the rules of the game in so far as that is concerned. But we're dealing with people who always look for opportunities to find a gap in the system. I think it was Honorable Mende who said she didn't understand because the number that was used as CPI was higher than what she knows. You are right. It is actually higher than what you know. I suspect that whoever is thinking about that number does not separate sums from averages. Right? If you say that CPI is 6% this year and 6% next year, you are cheating me if you say that, oh, it's 12% over the 2 years, give me 12% this year and next year. I mean, surely, even with bundle education, we understand the difference between the sum and averages, right? So you are right. There is a bit of that confusion there, but it cannot happen at least with us. We understand it. Now, Honorable Protestant asked several specific questions. Some of them will be answered by the acting CPO, but one of them related to something that is belonging with me and Mr. Mkhajan here. Insofar as several meetings, several things to exaggerate a bit, we were not there. To my recollection, there are several meetings to which we were invited, which we didn't participate in. I remember only one. And the meeting I remember, I mean, I call it one meeting, but it may have several dates, was in relation to negotiating with CPI. And we said, we wouldn't be involved in that. And we have, I think you've picked the reasons for it. It had nothing to do with saying we're not willing to help in this case, but we thought that it was not okay for that meeting, and you would understand why. But if you want me to elaborate, I can. Right? So that's the, we couldn't participate in that. Other than that, I've got no recollection of another meeting. Okay, he will talk, he says there may be another one that he will talk to. Now, there was another question from Honorable Pro about the amounts about what gets paid is per recipient. It can be very confusing. So the arithmetic does not move from 1644 to 17 million. It moved to 10.2 million, right? Because, as the minister was saying, a recipient could conceivably receive grants for more than one person. So you don't pay 16,144 per recipient. So the arithmetic works the other way. On the issue, and I think this is perhaps the last one for me, the other issue that arose was the issue of or the receivables. Couple of things with this. You see, in the some of this stuff relates to old order arrangements. You may recall the delivery of social security grants used to flow to provinces, provincial departments of social development before SASA was established, and then it would end up in there. A lot of the time, this is just a function of how the contract is structured for a start. What are the arrangements at the end of a period In other words, you transfer the money because payments for grants are due. Then when the runs, the payments are done, all of them, there is supposed to be a reconciliation process to say, you gave us money for 10 million, I'm using the number now, because it was the current one, but for 10 million beneficiaries, X percent of them didn't claim their money. Then there has to be an argument how you strip it back. And with interest and all that kind of stuff. But it's not as simple as I make it. Because, I don't know why I'm complicated, but let me just illustrate. So sometimes the money gets into, say, for instance, in a person's account, the person is still alive, but very ill, let's say for 2 or 3 months. So for as long as they live for those 2 or 3 months, the money is there. Right? So when they die, it belongs to their estate. At least the part that was paid when they were still alive. It cannot be a matter of you just send it back. You see those complications. So that is where that issue lies. It's not open crookery, as I understand it, where people just sit with it. Now, it requires some conversation to say, to the extent that that bank is sitting with the money, which one belongs to the estate of the people who are deceased, if at all, and which one has got to come back, how much interest has accrued to each portion. That's the first part of it. But a very important part of it, and this is preliminary, but we will give you the information when we have, we're asking the banks and the institutions that have been mentioned. The numbers that were preliminarily got are far smaller than the numbers that seem to have been floating around. For instance, in one instance, without mentioning the names, the number seems to, there have been a 500 million number versus 49 million. Now you get a different picture once you, but as I say, it's preliminary, it needs to be verified, just so that I don't like you. I'm just saying, we are following it up, and once we know the details on it, and we have found a way, because it is something that must be sorted out, can be left hanging forever, we will come back.
Chair, just a quick clarification. The thrust of the question on the bank issue is that was used as an excuse why the banks were not engaged. Those arrangements, would they affect the good standing of the banks? Let's put it that way. I understand that you're waiting for money and it's complex. Would it affect the good standing of the banks?
No. The ways to disqualify a bidder are more elegant. I can't look at your forehead and say you shouldn't be. No, I'm actually very serious about it. I mean, you've got to have a due process to arrive at the conclusion that these ones disqualify. It can't be just you get my point, right? Yeah. It can't be arbitrary. Thank the minister is helping me with English. It can't be arbitrary. So there can be, to my understanding, I don't think there is a ground at this stage simply to say, in this case, banks don't qualify. Is that just to connect it to the other point, which the DM has whispered to me, you see, what happens is, because people live within proximity of ATMs, right? Any mechanism that enables people to get the money from an ATM is hard to pull out. I hope I'm clear here. So that's why, for instance, the thing about the Green Road, once the money has set in the Green Road account, which is a bank, then people have the ability to access it anywhere where there's an ATM. Correct me if I'm wrong. So that's the essence of, you get that point. So then the issue arises. Maybe I'm saying too much now here. But the issue then arises, given the fact that you face these what you call them, the charges when you use a different ATM, given that you face those charges, is this not better, if it is possible to do it within the framework of the law, to transfer his money to the bank where he has an account, and then his money to the bank where he has an account, rather than have them face those tasks? That's a very valid question. It also connects to the question that was asked can you negotiate with the banks to give favorable terms to these people? Banks only give favorable terms to their customers. Because they cannot know that, there might be a way because of the card and stuff like that. But yeah, you can negotiate it. There can be a way to negotiate it right across the board. And in the context of the creation of the Mzansi account of many years ago, it became obvious that some of these things can be negotiated within the system.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question on particular on the 28th of July and that meeting. Now, we engage departments all the time and entities all the time, every day, in some cases through telephone calls, SMS, WhatsApp messages, and informal meetings. Now, in particular on this meeting with SASA, we had informed them a month in advance, by the way. We wrote to them because the formal engagement, the budget bilateral, whereby we have to look at the spending to date as at that time, we have to look at what they are putting together for as a bid for the 2017 budget. So we wrote them a month in advance. In this letter, we would have said, for instance, we give them items that you want to touch, even about the agenda item, where it was just SASA is readiness, and medium to long-term vision, and then, you know, issues around the banking solution, etc. Over and above, in this case, we gave them a one page of questions in relation to issues around the biometric, issues around payment methods, and how funds are going to flow in terms of the new payment model. That at that time they were engaging on, because one of the key issues was a budget bid that they were making, in particular for the new payment system that they were using. So after such a meeting, they engaged for the day's meeting from 11 to 3:30 in the afternoon, and then we kept a proper good minute where we shared with them and so on. So it's one of those, over and above what I said, the engagement. Now, in such bilateral members and measures, we take our gloves off, and they also take their gloves off. We engage thoroughly, closed sessions, closed meetings, whereby we cannot open up, because remember, a team of budget analysts in the Treasury engaging on every single number and idea, including things that in this such engagement would have picked up on issues that they might have told us in a previous engagement around their readiness, around what exactly they want to achieve, and we'll ask questions. Now, it's interesting that all of the issues, most of the issues that members are asking us today are issues that we have engaged on this, whether it's deduction, in terms of just understanding, because either we have a good budget analyst, the one who's listening to a TV, read newspapers and so on, and ask that as per an article on such and such a day, I picked up the issues around green roads and the TPS and deductions. What is your view? What are you doing to actually? And it's in those engagements that we help each other in terms of how we implement the budget moving forward and make sure that some things happen. So in some cases, most of the time, we obviously exceed our mandate as a treasury in engaging on issues that they would be responsible for. But at the end of the day, we would agree that matters that they need to take forward, that in future engagements, we kind of get proper feedback. Now, in terms of the issues that we would have agreed on, or for them to engage and look on, there would be better place to day after day, because this is, as I'm saying, it's a rolling engagement all the time. If you look at July 2016 last year, and in terms of the timeline that you presented this morning, various other processes quickly made leading to December and leading into those various engagements specific on the issue of payments and whether they will be ready to pay the first of April. So the engagement is continuous and it's always dynamic in all these things. Thank you.
Chairperson, if I may respond to some of the questions that honourable members have raised, and specifically honourable Bracey. Without at risk of stating the obvious, I'd like you to explain, before I answer a quick yes or no, how the process should work in a department when a deviation is submitted. The procurement system consists of three committees: specification committee, evaluation committee, and adjudication committee. And the reason why specifications would be very necessary to determine the kind of contract one entered into. So some of the considerations would be, is this a full sum payment? Is it a time and material payment? Is it a fee contract? Is it a combination? Or is it a time-based contract? Provisions are made in the accounting officer guide to determine the aspects of quality of specification, and it's necessary, even if it's a sole source or a single source, which is often the reason for a deviation, to formulate those. Once the specification committee has assessed this, then the sourcing part would start where a bid is invited. Even if it's a sole or a supplier, single supplier, a bid is always sourced because that forms the basis of a contract. Today we have the benefit that my colleague Solly Tsanganu is with us. He has specifically assessed the cases of the work streams, and maybe we can provide Chairperson some insight on what we have done since we received the application on the 23rd of June and eventually responded at the 19th of January. We will shorten, but then in the interest of time, maybe I could just highlight the process that we followed. We asked for additional information to make sure that it's very clear that this will be in the interest of delivering a work stream outcome. At the time, it was clear that there is going to be no competitive bid, and SASSA would build their own capacity to make the payment. At least in June, that was our understanding when we received this application. We received additional information that we requested in writing to explain why these prerequisite skills would be necessary to fast-track the work streams. And upon receiving that clarification, we approved the deviation, provided that the cost is reasonable, and provided that the printout of the timesheet and detailed invoices generated by this contract. Chairperson, that's the process we followed to consider the application, and there was communication between ourselves and SASSA seeking that clarification. They will give us that it made sense that we had a continuity issue that we had to address. Yes, sir.
All right. Can I help briefly? I think we chose Outlook.
Thanks. I just want to clarify the deviation for the work stream was not approved for Prodom. And the background is that they, after they deviated, which the deviation started in July 2015. And that process went on until the contract, three contracts were signed in June 2016. Therefore, there was no way where you would say it was impractical to invite competitive bidding, because they had a period from July 2015 and the contract for the West team were only finalized in June 2016. Therefore, for 12 months, you can't say I didn't have time to invite you. Therefore, Scout is mixing the other because we're so many countries. That deviation has not been approved, and there's no, we don't know whether the Auditor General will declare it to be reclassified. That's the fact that I was talking about. The 316 million also, that is not fresh. It was declared irregular expenditure because the deviation which the CEO, the former CEO, first verbally approved it and later in writing, it was declared irregular expenditure. But then, after that, corruption was alleged that this is not a regular expenditure, it looks like a wasteful expenditure, and they are taking SASA and CPS, the matter is caught now. They are saying CPS must fund that and clearly in the future.
All right.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just want to clarify because we've got a material issue here. So on page 30 of this report, where it says that the work streams are improved, which is what Mr. Dumont says, so you're saying something completely different. Saying they weren't approved for a year, so they can't both be correct. Can we just get clarity from whoever who is correct? I fully accept that Mr. Dumont is correct on something else. Can we just get clarity?
Well, I would imagine the command of the is the man, you can't say he's the man who dealt with it. Yeah. Right? I want to check
clarification that I think we required. I'm specifically referring to the letter that we submitted on the 19th of January pertaining to the period for the procurement process for the application received on the 23rd of June. That's the period that I'm responding to, and I'm quite sure Solly has clarified this comes from a previous financial year where there was a 12-month that's not covered. I hope that clarifies the matter sufficiently. So the end of the financial year 2014-15.
This is not a hard thing. It's record. There is an application, there's a response to who gives them. Because now we can be mixed up because we're talking about different time periods, but there are several applications, more than one application and responses. You know, then we talk at past each other, but it's record that you can't change that can be the past.
All right. Okay. So that's part of me. I wanted to go out of court. So let us be brief because we're ahead.
No, Chair, we wanted to say that the Minister has answered many questions. And the spirit of the Minister has presented a collective interpretation here. They are applying their money collectively, they are not going to collect it here. It should be the one that we accept as a point and follow up the details that are interested in. We're not going to move aside of the matter itself. And as you have said, it's not just about the money. We would love really the minister to just submit a contract so that you can also see the other contractors. How do they talk to each other? How do they close up to the concerns that you have expressed? I mean, that you have really expressed to me that concern the security matters of where the contract is and how to move. And also to know exactly the detail of the financial how the financial terms are being spelled out. That will be true for 2060, how that increase is going to happen. I still see where we are sitting and we're quite happy about the information that's been provided. That being of course the case has been we're on our way to the constitutional court. I'm sure the right corner was present. So we are not going to think outside the law and how the law has been passed. We are raising our concerns towards the fact representing our own ordinary people who would love to speak to the matter being resolved in a manner to save our past and embarrass them for the future.
No, thanks, Chair. I think it's rather has assisted us. It demystified this whole thing. Because the perception out there was Treasury is not cooperative on this.
Now that the Treasury has given us the assurance that grants will be paid as from 1st of April within the parameters of the law and the budget, I am confident that that will happen. But on their presentation, unfortunately, Treasury has opened other loopholes. That simply means, as COPA, we need to further investigate that is these issues. We need, that would be my proposal, that we need to invite the CEO of SASSA to try and close certain gaps that Treasury has opened. And also, the issue of the post office. My proposal would be, maybe let's look at inviting them, that is in one session, and deal with those issues before we make a recommendation.
I want to add on what you said. That we need to have the CEO of SASSA to come to the public as part of our investigation. And but Chairperson, you need to tell each other about it, because I think where one needs to, like my minister said, really thank you, Minister, and the way and your team and the way they are doing. But Chairperson, what I see a problem as it can be brought together is miscommunication. I think that miscommunication is government department of If that miscommunication can be rectified, Chairperson, I think the problem that we spoke about, the concern that we spoke about earlier on, of inactive and other things that go to court, I think we can remove that. If it's procurement office, for instance, which can be picked up. Because, I mean, if you look at their mandate, it can actually help all those departments that we are talking about. Because it will be checking accountability and how people are spending money for government. So if it's not picked up, it's going to be the problem, not only for that problem, but tomorrow we'll be dealing with another problem as well. And if you look at PFMA page 18, section 79, it says that National Treasury may on good ground approve a departure from Treasury regulation or instruction or any condition imposed in terms of this act and must promptly inform the Auditor General in writing when it does so. Because I was trying to think, you know, as the Minister was presenting, do they have kids ready to buy it? And the PFMA did receive to buy it, but why are you not buying? And the problem, which is what we've been emphasizing is that most of the departments, they don't want to follow what is in the PFMA. And I'm saying now today, because the Minister is here, we need to have a workshop on PFMA with all the director general, or what you call accounting officers. So that when we finish that workshop, everybody can be on the same level. Because the problems that they have when they come to court proper is because they do not follow PFMA. And the only way that you can think of is that they don't know what is in PFMA. That's why they don't have to follow the regulations. So I'm just appealing to the minister, if that can be done together with the members of parliament, I think this will be this will correct.
I'll be very brief. As I indicated to the hour, today, as far as I'm concerned, the presentation by Treasury unraveled a lot of confusion. It gave an indication that we have some clarity now in terms of going back. I want to make a point. The committee not approaching the issue of the peace inspection. We need a full-scale structured inquiry so that we can actually drill down into the so we can bring this matter to a logical conclusion.
in the final analysis, where the money is, the money is and none of us is but you are concerned about due process, conduct, leadership, and whether there's any food system that can be provided providers, so we can actually get down, get to the bottom of how we end up because otherwise we run the risk of dealing with this matter ad hoc as and when matters arise. Rather, let us just dedicate ourselves to find the financial mechanisms applicable and have a full scale of requirements.
Mr. Person, we welcome the presentation from Tegney. We also welcome the efforts made by Tegney in very difficult circumstances to make progress. To see that at least we address the core of the problem, providing grants to 17 million people. And we appreciate the interventions made by Tegney. We are, however, concerned about the disregard from the Minister of Social Development, the Treasury Regulation, and the disregard for even court rulings in the past. And so we would like to join our colleagues in terms of agreeing that a full inquiry should be conducted, and we propose a full parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade.
I just want to check, most generally, because the question around the treasurer's report is
now, checking with Mr. General, I know it was reported to by National Treasurer. I just want to check if the Auditor General is there.
Honorable Chair, it's not reflected in the financial statement. The source of the receivables is as the Minister and the DG have indicated. It's with regard to old beneficiaries receiving grants. So that's with regard to that specific question.
Another part, I just wanted to make sure that we don't leave you. Once again, Comrade Minister, thank you very much to you and your team. And before I hand back to you, the issues that the Spoken Commission wants to talk to. I think I'll probably be speaking to all my colleagues today. The bravado that was displayed here last week was not checked. It appears that it was totally displayed. In terms of having everything under control in the process of unfolding as it was being articulated. I think what is emerged here is the process of getting a new contract was taken away not only from the CEO, it looks like now cabinet has now taken it away from the minister now to a team now led by the chairman, indicating that indeed there is a crisis of confidence in terms of how this process has been managed. I think we kind of emphasize our outcry from the company called CTF, how it is self-respecting. And we want to perpetuate behaving ways that are totally contrary to anything. Well, the constitutional court process for the minister, I think I'm speaking for myself, I'm sure for my colleagues. At some point we're going to complain about judicial operation. Yet our own incompetence is not invited into the realm of, you know, embedded culture. Totally. I don't know if the court says that is in contempt of the court. I don't know what to do.
At the end of it all,
chair is called into question. But the separation of powers doesn't have a Chinese wall between it either. And there are going to be grey areas into which society will find itself from time to time, and we'll have to learn to cope as a country in defining our own rules of the game in terms of what we do, so that we have the right checks and balances in place on the one hand, and demonstrate what it means to exercise good governance at the end of the day. So once again, thank you on behalf of my colleagues and myself for the interaction. And if there's any other information we can provide to you, you're most welcome. But I think a lot of that is right.
Thank you very much, Kumbhri. Very much, Kumbhri. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's just wait here.